Hello everybody and welcome to week 47. Dawn and Kobe here and we'll be discussing the week that was. So let's get started. Now, Kobe, obviously everybody's looking at how markets keep on slipping, keep on declining. Are we anywhere near the bottom?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, Dawn. You know, since markets were in free fall until we started seeing a slightly better than normal expected CPI number from out of the United States, and then all of a sudden markets took off. And I'm afraid to say that since then, after this run-up in stock prices, we've literally seen markets literally just going sideways, a bit like the rest of the year has gone, you know, a little bit up, a little bit down, and then you've got these massive one-day moves as the market is trying to take into consideration new information that is coming into the marketplace. Now, the one thing I can say to you, Dawn, is that markets are not yet pricing in a recession whatsoever. So markets at the moment are pricing in a soft landing. They're pricing in that potentially rates will go up a little bit more, and then quite frankly, they will stop. And how do I know this? Well, if you look at the level that the S&P 500 is trading off, you'll see that it's trading off basically like a 19 price to earnings ratio, 19 times earnings at this stage. And the earnings yield associated with that is about 5%, 5.2, 5.3%. That's in line with kind of where interest rates are going to be going in the United States. So therefore, equities aren't giving you any upside as a whole market. There's obviously individual stocks that could be priced quite differently, but as a complete market, they're not giving you an advantage for owning the equity relative to owning the actual fixed income. And the thing that's questionable, obviously, at this stage is growth, earnings growth. And where will that earnings growth come from? So penciled in, Wall Street at the moment is hoping that earnings next year will actually expand. And that doesn't seem to be the case. It's probably more going to be a earnings contraction next year. So we haven't seen earnings fall off a cliff yet, because remember that earnings is almost lags the economic cycle. Once you get all the forward indicators indicating it's going to happen and that the economy is slowing, then only do earnings actually start showing you that the economy is slowing, because they're always backward looking. So in January, we're going to be starting to report the last quarter of 2022. And then we're going to be starting to report in March. We're going to be showing figures, or the markets are going to be showing figures for what happens actually in 2023. And there, I think markets, quite frankly, or companies will start surprising on the downside as far as earnings are concerned. So is 19 times earnings a decent price to pay for markets, given where bond yields are at the stage? I'd probably say that's questionable. I'd probably say that many investors would want to see a deeper discount for equities relative to where equities are trading at the moment. Obviously, along the way here, we could have things like a Fed pivot where they change their mind around quantitative tightening and around interest rates. All of that could change these dynamics, and that's why watching the markets on a daily basis is important. But for most part, equities aren't the dripping roast that some people think they might be at these levels.
Super, Kobe. I think this is going to an ongoing story. We've already been chatting about it for a couple of weeks, and as you say, it's a matter of keeping an eye on it. And obviously, there could be a trigger event that sends things in one direction or another. But at the moment, it just looks like it's a slowly deflating balloon, and it might stop and go back up, barring any sort of sudden incident.
I think the big thing is that if you watch how markets, and a lot of technical analysts have said that the next 2 weeks is crucial, looking at moving averages. So looking at how markets behave, and if they break out of the trading patterns, that would either give you the ability to see more upside in markets, or alternatively, you know, if it breaks down at the bottom, then that would be more negative news for markets. I can't see it breaking out. There is no news that can drive markets forward at the moment. Obviously, that is different, though, if one looks at the interest rates space. Interest rates are, obviously, that's not the case when one looks at the bond markets. Bond markets are providing an opportunity today, which is quite different to what they have been providing for probably 20 years prior to this. And that is with a hike in interest rates. I mean, Dawn, you've seen that with the opportunity that interest rates are providing for investors.
Yes, you know, obviously the low-hanging fruit, the easiest way to see the upside to having interest rate increases is anybody that's on a fixed income or has savings and this kind of thing. The biggest downside is anybody that's got debt. And the one recommendation that I can make, which is a little bit contrarian and it's a little bit controversial, is that if you've got money lying around at the moment waiting to be invested and you do have any debt, one of the best places to actually, in inverted commas, invest that money is in that debt, because you cannot get, you will be in effect getting, say, around about 11, 12, 13% guaranteed return by actually decreasing your debt. So it's a really good place to park money in bonds, pay off cars earlier, all of those kind of things. And start with the most expensive debt. And usually the most expensive debt is something like a credit card or a personal loan.
Yeah, I mean, that's important. I mean, the bond markets, I think we've always been used to the South African bond market giving attractive rates. I mean, we this week were buying bonds out in the marketplace, you know, where the yields are running in excess of 10%. Absolutely wonderful for those that are retired. Absolutely wonderful instrument in order to include in the portfolio, because it brings a perpetuality to the total return that you're building inside an actual portfolio. So absolutely wonderful. We're seeing some of that starting to appear globally as well. Now, since we saw inflation surprising slightly on the downside, we've seen bond yields obviously retracing slightly, but the big inversion continues to happen between 2-year bonds, 10-year bonds. And that's quite interesting, because that inversion indicates that a slowdown is happening. It doesn't necessarily indicate a recession, but it indicates that there's a major slowdown that's busy happening. Dawn, that inversion, the 2-10-year inversion now in the US bond yield curve, that is now almost looking or slightly worse than what it was in 2000. I don't know if you remember the aftermath, you know, kind of going into that whole 9/11 type situation, starting to look something like that. And people are now starting to say, well, how far can that inversion continue between 2 and 10 year bonds? Because we're on our way to potentially looking like Volcker era inversions. And that points to a fairly deep, nasty recession that then kind of follows. So that's something that we watch quite a bit. It's like how far that inversion goes. At the moment, it's trading at about minus 0.60%. During the Volcker era, that inversion was trading close to minus 2%, which is a huge inversion on the yield curve. So bonds are an interesting space. Bonds are the place that all the action is happening at this stage, and the equity market is literally taking its cue from everything else that is happening in markets. And quite frankly, equities is a very volatile asset class, because it's trying to price in a near-term future that it doesn't quite understand. The other thing, just bringing it back locally, and just to kind of finish off kind of around the bond discussion, I see that S&P has continued to keep the South African foreign and local currency rating at BB- for South Africa. That's good news, and the fact that they continue to keep the rating going. But before anybody gets excited, it's similar to the ratings in Oman, the Dominican Republic, Ivory Coast, Honduras, Bangladesh, North Macedonia, and Uzbekistan. Just to kind of put a little bit of flavor to that. So it's not as if BB- is a great rating, but at least we're keeping stability as far as that is concerned. Dawn, we're not seeing stability is the NHI. I think you've written a fantastic piece around the NHI. I see Joe Pathlow, who's the Minister of Health, has again put this back on the table, and it's been on and off the table since really 2003, right?
Yes, it's been on and off the table for years and years and years now. And it does seem to be the favorite topic to put back on the table whenever the ruling party has some local election or ANC elections or all of those kind of things, because it's a populist move. I have written about this extensively over the years, and there are actually some articles in the Financial Mail fairly recently where I actually discussed this. But with this NHI, you need to look at another piece of legislation that is coming down the pike. Now, the NHI is sitting at a white paper. In other words, it's already in front of Parliament. The pension reform paper is still at a green paper level, but it contains more information around how the government might fund the NHI, never mind the pension reforms. And this NHI, and I actually spent yesterday going through the Act again with a fine-tooth comb, 180 pages of complete and utter boredom, but never mind. But it is a very concerning piece of legislation. It has been modified from its original sources, where it was kind of really frightening stuff, the kind of stuff that would make a reasonable person that if it was introduced, pack up their bags and go immediately. But the biggest issue that I have is that the ruling party might be made to force their hand and actually implement this. And what it will mean to the man on the street is a couple of things. One, medical aids will cease to exist in their entirety, and gap covers with them, because gap covers cannot exist without medical aids. It's purely because medical aids in the Act will be prohibited from covering anything that the NHI covers, and the NHI covers everything except cosmetic surgery. The government is obviously wanting to get their hands on the massive reserves that are sitting with medical aids, you know, more than half of it probably with Discovery, but we're talking billions of rand. And obviously rubbing their hands together with glee, hoping to get their hands on that, on those funds. But the thing is that they haven't read the Medical Aids Act properly. Those funds do not belong to the government. They do not belong to the medical aid schemes. It belongs to the members. So if medical schemes have to disband, that money should go back to the members. Whether it will or not, of course, is you know, moot. But it's more than likely that the government will, I don't know, expropriate it if it gets to that level. I'm hoping that sense is going to prevail. If you look at the green paper that's on the pension funds, the projected contributions that, you know, we taxpayers would have to make will be onerous. They will increase our, you know, medical aid contributions by several fold. You know, you will go from contributing 5,000 rand a month as a family to contributing 20. And that is just completely unaffordable, which is one of the reasons why I think that any calculation has been kept out of any conversations or the Act, is that everybody knows that this is unaffordable, but it suits their narrative to bring it up and say, look how good we are. And, you know, look what a great, you know, look how we're looking after everybody. What the government needs to do is, rather than destroy private health and drag it down to the level of government health, is to actually do something about the corruption, the maladministration, etc., in the government health as a starting point before they start to destroy something that is working quite perfectly.
And I suppose if sense doesn't prevail, hopefully the endless list of other priorities for government, which includes things such as Eskom, Transnet, and various, and the list is long, of entities that require attention and money, might be burdened by trying to ensure that those entities work, and at least at some level work, you know, because without those, South Africa doesn't go forward. With a broken Eskom, South Africa cannot take the next step as far as growth is concerned. And I think that's part of the reason why the S&P rating was such a surprise, because a lot of analysts believe that S&P would downgrade South Africa again, predominantly because of all these things that are burdening the economy and just can't allow it to actually move forward. Elective conference will be interesting. Interesting to see how the rating agencies talk about that and take that into consideration. I mean, Dawn, the other thing, which which we're talking about government policy and, you know, and how difficult it makes business, is the issue that Dis-Chem finds itself in. I'll give you this as an anecdote, right? Dis-Chem is down 10% this month. It's down 14% year to date. Its largest competitor, and the company that owns that space, is Clicks. Clicks is down 4% month to date and 4% year to date. Clicks is an absolutely wonderful business. It's not a cheap business, but it's an absolutely wonderful business, and it's created perpetuality in their business model, in their specific sector and what they're trying to achieve. But Dis-Chem, as I think most of our listeners would know, is the victim of an ill-fated memo that was sent by the chief executive officer. And that memo is what really spoke about how different racial groups have to be hired inside the company. Now, that might comply exactly with what the law requires, but it left a bad taste in investors' mouths. And it shows you the very difficult path that I think companies walk in South Africa, trying to fulfill the law, trying to comply with the law, but at the same time trying to be sensitive to others. That's quite a difficult place for people to be, I think.
You know, broad-based economic empowerment is, you know, a controversial issue, particularly in business, because it is burdensome and it doesn't have any kind of sunset clause. So, you know, it's been decades since 1994, but BBBEE, it's probably going to carry on for many more decades. And it results in most of the impact is actually hidden. The biggest mistake Dis-Chem made was, you know, putting this in writing and making it public. Every single company in this country has to deal with that issue. They perhaps have better reputational managers and better ways of communicating it, because this is not a shock. It's just, it was so badly handled that, you know, it just got up everybody's back. And more importantly, it got up every investor's back, which is why they've been dumping this share left, right, and center. But
I also think, sorry, just to add to what you're saying, Dawn, I mean, I think the reality of running a country, the reality of running a business and businesses within this economy sometimes starts, and we're starting to see that happen. You know, the reality starts biting. And you can see that and this was a couple of weeks ago, where Eskom are now no longer having to deal with the subsets of Black economic empowerment, where they've waived that, because now suddenly it's a critical service, it's a critical sector, and have to try and bring this thing back up to speed. And they've realized that potentially this is harming the organization. And maybe as reality bites in other sectors in the economy, as reality bites for the country as a whole, and quite frankly, maybe you're seeing broad-based Black economic empowerment, or maybe BEE, transforming itself into something that's quite different to what we're actually seeing today. Because quite frankly, I think it's doing a lot of harm, whilst its intentions was actually that to not to do this level of harm.
I think you're on the spot there. There's absolutely no doubt that, you know, previously disadvantaged communities need to be given a leg up, and that should start right from education, and not just start once they start to get employed. So, you know, it's a long-term issue. You know, you need to look at places like Singapore, Malaysia, to see how they actually got that right, how to improve the education side of it. But obviously, that is a multi-decade process of actually increasing the education and everything else. But, you know, I think the concerns are that it's a BEE or whatever, the broad-based economic and procurement and all of that is riddled with corruption still. And that is where the major issue is. If the corruption can be removed from that, you know, from that process, it would be much more effective. You know, tenderpreneurs and, you know, people going in, particularly in procurement, going into business, winning tenders when they have absolutely zero experience. But one of the other things that concerns me, and we're coming back to the NHI as well, is that you're going to see a silent immigration of skilled and educated people as a result of this, particularly young white South Africans. They'll get a first-class education here and they will leave quietly. Nobody will know they leave. You don't have to tell SARS that you're leaving. You've never been a taxpayer. You just leave. And that silent emigration, and you're seeing it in the NHI as well, if suddenly all the medical practitioners in the country have to accept the government stated salaries, you're going to see a mass migration. If the only way that they are allowed to operate, because it isn't clear in the latest version, but certainly in previous versions of the NHI, doctors would not be allowed to operate in the private practice space. You're not allowed to, you know, you're already seeing mass migration of nursing staff. They all go over to the NHI or over to Canada and get paid much better salaries than they do here. And that will just continue. So unwinding that is not, again, a multi-decade
process. That's not easy.
It's not like a road that breaks down. You just, you know, throw some money at it and it's fixed. You know, when you start to erode the skills base, you've got a huge problem.
Mm. Well, before we get any more negative, Dawn, let's end week number 47, and we'll be back next week to talk about week number 48.
Thank you very much, Kobe. See you all next week. Bye.